You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Is this thing on? Hello, everybody. Is this thing on? Microphone check. 1, 2. Is this thing on? Ladies and gentlemen,
hey!
Welcome to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. And I put out a podcast recently. What was that? Last Wednesday. This one is launching on Friday. Last Wednesday, I put out one with my buddy from Michigan, Nate Rosenfeld. Today, I'm doing another podcast from someone from Michigan, and we talk a little bit about everything, man. We talk about business, we talk about content, we talk about ethics, we talk about our love for the sport. We talk about trying to find common ground, even though, you know, my view of how somebody hunts might be a little bit different. And I might not find interest in it, but if we're really looking to support fellow hunters, where is the common ground? And I think once we can find common ground, then we can set aside maybe some differences or set aside, because at the end of the day, I don't really give a shit how other people view me and my style of hunting. It's the common ground and the appreciation for the wild game that we chase, really. And so that's what today's conversation is about. Really, really good conversation with my man, Aaron Blicey from the Fall Podcast, also based out of Michigan. It's a good one, dude. Outside of that, I just want to send a huge shout out to each and every one of you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. Now, here's what I'm looking for. I've done a lot of hunter profiles over the course of the last 10 years, okay? And so I would love to interview some of the people that I maybe interviewed 5, 6, 7 years ago on a Hunter Profile podcast. And I want to catch up with you to see what you've done since the last time that we've talked. Specifically, like, I can remember talking to a couple guys where it was their first year being mobile. And some of them found success, some of them didn't. I would love to talk to those guys. There are some guys there that I can remember. I got to dig back. Some guy took a boat a lot. He would put in at a boat landing. He would drive across the lake and he would set up on the opposite side of this lake, maybe on some core engineer ground or something like that. If you're listening, I'd love to talk to you about that. And what you've done since then, and just kind of follow up with people on how they've been doing over the course of the last, you know, 7, however many years it's been since we've talked. So before I get into today's episode, though, I do want to send a huge shout out to all of the partners on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast, and that is Tethered, Wasp, and Wasp has a discount code NFC20, Vortex Optics, Code Blue Sense. Code Blue has a discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Huntworth, Reveal, and of course my brand. You got to go out and buy the new shirts, dude. Go buy the deadlift. If you're a gym nut, you like to go to the gym, you like to work out, go pick up the Deadlift Dead Bucks t-shirt. It's badass. It looks good on you. I don't even know what you look like, but I know it looks good on you. It'll probably get you some action from a wife or girlfriend, or maybe even a complete stranger. We haven't run those tests yet, but that's a possibility. Or if you're a slayer, or you want people to think you're a slayer, pick up the broadside double lung t-shirt. It's brand new. Or one of our other t-shirts, like the Slayer tee or the Full Sneak Fight Club tee. We got Nine Finger Chronicles hats. We got Full Sneak stocking caps. Go check those out. Outside of that, FullSneak.com, FullSneakGear.com. Don't even know my own shit. But I'm sending good vibes to everybody, man, on this Friday. Have a fun weekend. Enjoy yourself. Let's get into today's episode. One, is the audio good at your end?
We're good. Are you good on my end?
I'm good on your end and my end.
There you go.
We're good to go?
Yeah.
We're good to go. Dude, hey, it's another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we got a guy who, man, when did we do that series? How long ago was that?
I want to say this past summer? No, I think it was the summer before, honestly.
Yeah? So it's been over a year?
It has been over a year.
Dude, I'm sorry. I feel like I should have reached out to you before then, but here we are.
This is a two-way street, man. I could reach out to, and I have, honestly, man, I feel like I've been living in a bubble, and honestly, I don't know what to tell you. I feel like I was doing podcasts this last year. 2024 was my kryptonite when it comes to podcasting. I'll be straight up honest with you on record that I was just getting podcasts out to get them out because I was so busy. And podcasting is a second job for me. It is not my first and foremost deal. It fell on the back burner, and I apologize to all my listeners. I put out a podcast today apologizing because they deserve more than that, and I need to give more than that. And I'm not going to lie to you. It was just like, who is an easy person to get on right now and talk, and let's get it out. And I feel terrible for that, man.
Yeah. Yeah, when there's this balancing point, and I was talking to Tony Peterson about this. Oh shit. I'd say in a couple weeks ago, and we were having this conversation of, I am at a point in my life where I need this, right? This is my full-time job. And so I need this to make money. And so there is a point where I have to put out content to put out content. Right. And because I need all of that to accumulate throughout the course of the year to generate enough potential advertising space to where I can sell advertising to make money, so forth and so on. And so now I was hitting this stride where I was really like I was doing stuff I didn't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, I know I needed to do it to keep the business floating and going in the right direction, but I was also doing it just to doing it. And it wasn't because of passion or interest or things like that. And so I hope people understand that guys who are doing this full time and guys who are doing it part time, like the guys who are doing it part time, the benefit for them is that if they don't want to like put a podcast out, they don't have to, right? Mm-hmm. For me, I rely on that. So I don't know, man. It's just,
I agree. Yeah. I agree. But I fall in a bucket where my mindset is I can't miss a week, even though it's not my full-time gig. Cause I just don't do things half-ass. And this last year I never missed a week. And actually I put out more podcasts in a lot of weeks, multiple podcasts, but it, like I said, it got to the point where I really wasn't thinking about guests and thinking about like what topics and what I want to talk about. It was just like, let's get on and just like, okay, you killed a big deer this year. Let's talk about that. Like, and honestly, man, it was a tipping point for me. And it was a moment where, I really needed to evaluate, cause I still love recording podcasts. It is my release to everything else that I do. The thing is, and you've been doing this game a lot longer than I have, and there's a lot of saturation in this podcast game, and I'm always trying to be a little different and do things a little different, and I'm trying to morph my content a little bit more, maybe, you know, still around the hunting thing, but not endemic as well. You know, like you and I are having a conversation right now, like this is the kind of stuff that I want to be doing on my side as well. Hey, we're winging it. Joe Rogan wings it every time, wings it, you know? Yep. So that's kind of where I'm at, I guess.
Well, it keeps it, I mean, cause man, there's a lot of ways to kill a big deer.
right? There's a lot of ways to go about it. There's a lot of ways to talk about the biology and all of the stuff surrounding wildlife and stuff like that. But then, like, I've reached a point where I love deer hunting, but I don't necessarily want to have another five tips to hunting the rut type of episode. You know, it's just like, well, if you want to go listen to it, go listen to the 13 other episodes that I've done talking about it, right? Already. Yeah. But I still enjoy it. I still love hearing the stories from average Joes to the big dogs in the industry and everybody in between. And I guess the passion side of it at the moment is still outweighing the business side of it. And so, and I'm not bored with it yet. So the second people will know when I get bored, because I'll probably just will shut it all down and won't do it anymore.
Right. Let me ask you this, because you did make a comment about putting content out, and it might have been not for the passion, it was for just to get content out kind of thing. Yep. How do you navigate when you have that feeling of like, oh, it's my livelihood, I've got to get this out, but the fire might not burn on that piece of content like it does other stuff. Like, how do you navigate that?
Well, so for me as a host, I always try to put the guest first above all things. And I think that anytime, maybe it is an episode where I don't have the personal fire for it, but I know that the guest is extremely excited to tell their story on this platform. And that excitement then allows me to get excited about it, if that makes sense. So, because let's face it, there's a lot of guys out there who they're like, Jesus, like, I'm a nobody. Why do you want me on your podcast? I'm like, cause you have a story to tell. And so they get excited about telling that story, even though I have interviewed people like that several times before. I always put myself in their shoes and I try to get excited along with them. So I hope that answers the question.
That makes sense. Because you know, hosting something for doing it, I'm just starting year 8 right now. And, doing a lot of episodes, it's like, I find myself sometimes going through the motions and just like, Ben here, let's just hit record and let's see what happens.
Yep.
And I have to consciously like be on top of that fire and like, hey, when I hit record, like let's Dan Campbell and run through a brick wall right now. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of where I'm at. So I'm interested to hear what you had to say about that. The other thing I had to say or ask you too was, now I forgot. What is your favorite type of guest to have on?
Straight up, a guest who has energy. I mean, somebody who is excited, like some dude who I know I could potentially run into on some hunt somewhere, right? Like some guy who, like, I really enjoy people that I relate to. So I really enjoy having people who have chaotic family lives, because I can relate to that. And so, like, for example, I can't remember who I was interviewing, but it was somebody who had just had a baby and they hadn't slept in like 3 straight weeks. And they're just like, Jesus, I'm exhausted and all this. And I had the opportunity to not necessarily give them any advice, but be able to be like, dude, it gets easier. I know exactly what you're going through right now. Cause my son, my oldest son, he didn't sleep through the night for the first 18 months of his life.
Holy shit.
Yeah. It was a fucking nightmare type scenario. And then I look at my brother and, I don't know what the technical term is, but his first kid, when he was in the womb, got feces in his lungs and he was born and it was like a really what's going to happen here type moment. But then they got all that up. They knew he was going to be okay, but it caused him to have like severe acid reflux and severe, like, I do, that he cried. And when I mean cried, he wailed for like 48 hours in a row a couple times.
Oh my gosh.
And to the point where they were, my sister-in-law and my brother were on the verge of insanity because this baby was crying so much. And so they relied on like mother-in-laws and mothers to come in and basically just like get them out of the house,
mm-hmm.
just so they could survive. You know yeah. what I mean? And so you can relate to some of those things. And then anytime anybody says, "Oh dude, I got it bad," you can hear a story or share a moment with someone. And then they go, "Well, maybe," or I go, "Well, maybe I don't have it as bad as I think I do," type of deal. Yeah. So it just puts things into perspective. And I like when a guest can share those types of relevant, relatable types of stories.
Yeah. You can always look over your shoulder and be like, someone else has got it worse than I do right now.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's so hard to think about that in the moment, because that's how my deer season went this year. Dan, if you were like, "Hey, grade your deer season," right off the rip, without me thinking about it, I'd be like, "Dude, I had a pretty shitty season." But then when I step back and think about it, and I really crunch the numbers, I killed one of my target bucks. I went full draw and hunted the biggest deer I've ever had to hunt in Michigan this year. And you know, I had 7 encounters with the bow in my hand with good bucks. I was full draw like 5 different times on bucks, just never got, you know. And then it's like, no, when you really think about it, I had an awesome season. Like a lot of guys out there might even only see a dozen deer a year, you know, for one reason or another. But me, I had some, that first week of November, dude, was, I'm going to tell you, it felt brutal to me, but if I told you, you'd be like, "Ah, that's not that bad," you know, but in the moment and how hard I am on myself, that outweighed me killing one of the better deer I've killed in a long time in Michigan here, on the 9th of November, you know, it just kind of like blanketed that over.
Yeah. So, yeah. I feel that same sentiment. Like I look back and if you go back and listen to every podcast that I put out in the last 3 weeks of November and into December, you will hear a guy acting like a baby, bitching and complaining about wind direction, about the rut being dog shit, about, you know, all these other things that were somehow affecting me. But what I didn't emphasize is that I passed 2 4-year-olds. I passed 150-inch, what I believe is a 3-year-old. And so I came to full draw on him. So it's not like I didn't have opportunity, right? Even because there's guys out there who are listening to me say that, and they're like, "What a dipshit. Like, what are you bitching about?" I've never seen a 140-inch 4-year-old. Like, I've never seen one. And so I look back at that and I go, "God, yeah, I was a bit of a baby and bitching about that kind of stuff." But, you know, when you have this baseline that you're accustomed to, and then that baseline, it changes because of things that you cannot control, right? So the past 10 years, I look at the past 10 years, eight to 10 years of hunting, I was on a roll in Iowa and I was shooting 4-year-olds or higher, minus a 2-year-old that got away from me one time, but
I won't worry about it.
Well, I mean, he didn't get away, but I thought he was this huge stud buck. And when I walked up on him, I'm like, I could put him in my pocket type of deer, but we won't talk about him. We'll talk about, the success that I had over these years. And so this year going into this season, I had really high expectations. I'm like, there's 3 or 4 deer that I'm going to try to shoot. And I had encounters with them. And, some of them, I had an opportunity to, you know, I had a really good 8-pointer that I let an arrow go this year. And he ended up, I hit a branch and the arrow nosedived down. So again, I got within shooting range of some really good deer this year, just not my top 4 or 5 bucks. And outside of that, I should have nothing to complain about. And that's a very long way of saying that. I talked with a guy recently and he asked me a similar question. The second I knew that my mule deer was dead this year, it was a 10 out of 10 season for me, no matter what happened in Iowa or Kansas. And so, yeah, it was a, this for me was a 10 out of 10 season, because I have wanted a mule deer so bad I could taste it, and I finally got it. And that my Kansas buck that I shot this year, dude, that was just the cherry on top.
Yep.
Even though Iowa was extremely brutal this year.
Yeah. I get that for sure. My season was a B plus, A minus. And the only reason why it wasn't an A plus plus is because I had a goal. I've had a goal to kill a buck on my family farm that I have not killed a buck on since 2016. There's a lot of hunters on it. It's 220 acres with 11 different guys that hunt it. It's a lease. But it's difficult. It's big woods. It's a difficult piece, and it's navigating kind of like public ground. And I had an opportunity. I could have killed a buck there. I passed him up 18 yards. It was a buck that I probably would have killed in the past. And I decided to not shoot him because I had a goal.
This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
And I wanted a different deer. So I think if I would have killed that deer or killed a deer on that property, that would have been my cherry on top. But all my other goals I did achieve this year. So,
yeah,
I mean, it really wasn't that bad of a season. I had a great year, you know?
Yeah. So,
LifeLock, how can I help?
The IRS said I filed my return,
but I haven't.
1 in 4 tax-paying Americans has paid the price of identity fraud.
What do I do?
My refund, though.
I'm freaking out.
Don't worry, I can fix this.
LifeLock fixes identity theft guaranteed and gets your money back with up to $3 million in coverage.
I'm so relieved.
No problem. I'll be with you every step of the way.
1 in 4 was a fraud-paying American. Not anymore. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
I want to touch base on this specific topic right now. And you hear this saying, and it is, don't pass a deer on day one that you would shoot on the last day. Yep. Right. I don't agree with that. Like,
I can't either.
I can't get on board with that. And that's because the second you tag out, you're done. So you don't have any opportunities to potentially achieve this goal. And I've always said my goal is a sliding scale, mm-hmm. right? And depending on how I feel that day or what deer are available or what deer are showing up, that's what I'm going to chase and go do. And so on November 1st, the afternoon hunt of November 1st, I creeped down into this drainage, into this big block of timber, and I had the exact wind that I wanted for this whole deal to go down. And long story short, I had a like 140, maybe a little bit bigger, low 140s class 8-pointer with some junk coming out of his bases show up. I had him at 20 yards quartering, and I didn't even pick my bow up at him. And so because I was after something specific in that area, but the last day, I would have shot him in a heartbeat. The last day, if he would have showed up, I would have shot him. So what's your thoughts on that?
So great point. And this is something I talk or think about a lot. I depends on location where I'm at. Now, let's take, for instance, here on all my Michigan farms. If I get a deer on camera, I did this year, I got a great deer on camera that I normally would have killed no matter what, whether it's day one or day 100, I would have killed him no matter what. He met the criteria. He was still alive after our gun season, and we still had bow season left. And there comes a point here where if I know I can keep that deer alive through gun season and I can hunt him next year, I will not go hunt him. Now, there is a caveat to it. If he is a very special deer, like a deer that is like a one percenter, then I will definitely, But if it's something like this deer that is alive, I've killed deer like him before. He still gets my motor running. I still like get excited about a deer like that. But I'm like, man, he's made it this far. I'd like to see him at 4 years old. You know, I would really, because at 4 years old, he will be the one percenter. And that's where it kind of differs for me. Now, I will say this. I have only hunted public ground for 2 years. I went on an Illinois public hunt this year. The first day, if a two-year-old or a three-year-old comes by and it tickles my fancy, if he makes me excited and gets the bow up, like I would have shot him day one and I would have been done, tagged out. That's $2,000 worth of trip. Everything added up was roughly about $2,000. I would have been happy as a clam, you know, and it wasn't just because like, oh, I need that notch in my belt. It's a little bit of that, but like I knew I wasn't going to come back. This was the only trip I was making out there. I wasn't coming back. I wasn't doing that. I came out here to try my hand at killing a deer on public ground. Now, the first deer that tripped my trigger, he was going to be it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would have shot him on day one. I would have shot him on the last day. So I do agree with you, because I've shot deer like that on that. Well, let me think. I did shoot one year in Missouri on January 14th that I walked up on him. He had a little ground shrinkage. I thought he was a little bigger than what he was, and I probably wouldn't have shot him beforehand, but he did get me excited. So I obliged for sure.
Yep. I have these categories. This is going to sound stupid, but I have a do not shoot category or just won't shoot. And a lot of that depends on where I'm at. Then I have a Euro mount category, and then I have a shoulder mount category. Yep. Okay. And that may sound stupid, but when I go on my non-resident hunts, I'll shoot a deer. Like if it's for the most part, I have to know or have seen something to make me pass other deer. But if I'm going into a non-resident hunt, and I don't know what's there and the scouting has led to me, you know, 1, 2, maybe even a 3-year-old buck. Maybe it's a mule deer, maybe it's a whitetail, whatever. Man, I'm there for opportunity, not to be passing deer like I did this year in Iowa. And the reason is because I live in Iowa. I have more time to scout. I have more time to run trail cameras. I have all of those aids to help me. And then when I go out west or to a different state, Kansas, you know, I told my uncle, I'm like, when I went and hunted on his farm and he told me, dude, you can shoot whatever you want. I shot whatever I wanted, right? I passed, you know, he had some trail camera. He didn't run trail cameras a lot. And he's like, I'm glad he didn't shoot that buck because we have others, trust me, in the area. So I had that intel from my uncle and the property from my uncle. Now, if I went to Kansas on a piece of public, I would have shot these kind of guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I'm getting to the point in my life where I'm looking for experience and I'm looking to fill tags.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yep. I have 100%. And I will say, you know, in Michigan, I won't kill a buck unless it's going on the wall. Like it has to go on the wall. It has to meet that criteria for me. I only have 1 Euro mount. And it's no reason other than like, it was either put a deer on the wall or either don't shoot something, or that's basically what it is you put a deer on the wall or you don't shoot something. And it's, I will say, I'm going to be totally transparent here. The Illinois thing or the public land thing, I've never shot a public land deer. And I want to shoot one. I do want that notch in my belt for my own gratification. Now, that might be a deer that's not going to go on the wall. Is that bad? When I look at it, it's like, you know, that's not my criteria. Because I've talked to my wife about it, and my wife sometimes just does. She's been ruined because she sees, like, the deer that I've killed on the wall. And she's like, why would you travel out there to shoot something you could shoot here? And I'm like, good point. Like, I totally get that. But also, you know, what goes into it, it's easy to, and I'm not saying she was judging, but it's easy to look at the lens from where you're sitting and not doing what I'm doing and going through the cold ass mornings and getting into a tree when you don't want to, and, or, you know, getting walked in on by a guy or something like that. And then this deer shows up. It's like, you know, sometimes it's just things happen, I guess. I don't know. So like, I like the category thing you got, but my, if I call Dan Johnson and it's October 3rd and it's, you know, it's, if you know it's prime time and you know I'm hunting and I'm calling you, you look at your phone and you're like, oh, Aaron's calling me. You, I want you to know that I just killed something that's going on the wall, basically.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah. I mean, in, for me in Iowa, 100%, if I'm calling you like an hour, like any, like first light in the morning or the last 30 minutes of, well, this year I shot my buck in Kansas. This is no joke. My uncle dropped me off. I hopped this cattle fence, crossed a creek, climbed up in the tree stand, dropped my Ozonix out of the stand, climbed down to get it, came back up, set it up, heard something snap behind me, stood up, grabbed my bow, shot the buck. I was in the stand 15 minutes, maybe.
That's wild.
Yeah. So I shot this buck at like 2:30 in the afternoon, 2 or 2:30 in the afternoon. And that's so cool. I've never had a scenario like that play out where right when you get in there, like I've never shot a buck first thing in the morning or like right away in the afternoon. So that was fun, but I don't know, man. I just have to say that I'm less selective when I go out west. I mean, it's tag filling, and I'll kill legal bucks, man.
I'm interested to, because I know what kind of goes into it for me, but like, what triggers that chromosome in you? Like, why is that? Is it the money that you're spending? Is it the time away from family? Is it the fact that you just want to kill a buck, or is it, what is it?
Well, let's not kid ourselves. You're going to be more successful in the environment that you spend the most amount of time in, right? So if you said, Dan Johnson, here's a mule deer tag, I have to drive 10 hours to get to mule deer, okay? I can't scout. I don't have trail cameras. I don't know anybody. I mean, I know people out there now, but I don't have an idea. I don't have historical data. I don't have any of that stuff. So for me to walk into that a brand new environment and think that I'm just going to slay, right? Now, you got the Andy Mays of the world who, dude, I don't know if that dude smells like deer and they just find him. Like, that's the kind of guy who he just goes and sits in the woods and deer just come to him.
Right.
Right. Like, he's got that type of, I don't know what the deal is. This dude, he's a special human being in my eyes. Right. That's not me. Right. I can't locate deer like that. I know that I'm going to sit up high. I'm going to glass, or I'm going to go into a chunk of timber and I'm going to scout, look for tracks, set up on the pinch points, the travel corridors, yada, yada, yada. And I'm going to go through that process, whatever environment that I'm in. And I don't have the time to just be like, nope, he's not good enough for me. Right. And I also, I use a lot of information from, I mean, like talking with other people, talking with landowners, talking with other people who hunt public, you know, just being kind and courteous to others and be like, hey man, you seeing any deer? Well, I was pheasant hunting down here the other day and I kicked up a good buck. Okay, well, that's a good start. And then I go and check it out. Maybe he's there, maybe he's not, whatever the case is. I don't spend time in those environments. And I feel, going back to the question, is, yes, I paid money to go on this trip. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm spending 8 days away from the family on some of these trips. I owe it to them, because going on a, like, I understand hunts don't have to be successful in order for the hunt itself to be successful. But like you said, your wife doesn't understand. My wife and kids don't understand. Like, you went out there and you passed deer. Like, what do you mean? So that actually plays a role into some of that too. Plus, I love venison, man. And this mule deer that I shot this year is probably one of the best tasting pieces of wild game I've ever put in my mouth. Hands down, better than whitetail. Mm-hmm. And so I can't explain it like on paper, but I don't know. It's just part of me that's like, okay, it's time to get a little bit primal.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Let me ask you this too, because this is something interesting. Like, you know, you live in Iowa, you've grown up in Iowa. Let's play a hypothetical game in here. Let's take away every trail cam you ever got to run. And you just don't have that knowledge anymore. Nobody does.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
But you live there. You mm-hmm. see deer out in fields. You see that. Mm-hmm. Would it change for you in Iowa, you think? Like, I know it's probably hard to answer, but like trail cams, you know, we hunt different at home than we do when we're out of state. Like, it's just how it is. You're actually not against the wall at home because you can kind of come and go and it's convenient. So would that change for you? Would you kill a buck that you'd pass up on the first day? Would you kill him on the last day in Iowa if that side of your brain just didn't exist?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. My whole strategy would change. Mm-hmm. Let's not get it twisted. Trail cameras are a bit of a cheat code. It's the game. A trail camera is the Nintendo Game Genie for deer hunting.
Yeah.
Do you know what a Game Genie is?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So for those who don't know what a Game Genie is, I'm a 1980s kid. So a Game Genie, you put it into the Nintendo and then you put the game into the Nintendo, and it had a whole bunch of like cheat codes in it that you could go and select from to make the game easier. And so trail cameras make the game easier, period. And it allows me to know what's running around. You take that out, I don't know what's running around. So would I shoot smaller bucks? Probably, but I would also change the strategy of more time glassing, more observation sets, because I mean, with today's technology, I don't spend as much time in the timber as I used to, because I have intel telling me on the outsides of these bedding areas what's showing up, what's hitting scrapes, what's going through these fence crossings. And I know that I can go right into the bedroom without knowing what's in there. And because everybody knows now for the most part. And there are going to be people who comment, I don't know what's going on. Well, yeah, that's because you don't use trail cameras then. Right. And so would my average go down of inches? Yes, it would. But it's not like I don't get the opportunities anyway, because my tree stands are still in the same locations. I would just be more surprised if I had to guess. You?
Yeah. It would definitely change. I think cell cams are a little bit of a cheat code. I wouldn't say like soaker cams. Now they do help, but you know, I actually have a pile of trail cameras on my floor right here next to me, because I pulled them all yesterday and I ran, I don't know how many soaker cams this year that I just never touched. And I was flipping through them last night and I'm like, oh my God, if I would have pulled this card though, oh my God, he was a 3-day window. And, but what that told me is like, hey, next year in that area, that's where I'm going to spend some time, you know? So is it any more of cheating if it's a year removed, or if it's, you know what I mean? Like if I'm using even my cell cams in a lot of ways, I'm using those in the way of giving me windows for future reference. You know, I'll be straight up honest with you. Cell cams and trail cams in general have tipped me off to spots that, you know, I've killed numerous bucks in over the years. Mm-hmm. And is that cheating if it's year, 2 year, 3 years removed because a camera gave me that info? I don't know. Is it a cheat code? I don't know. I still scout as much. I would make the argument that I spend as much time, if not more, in the off season scouting private ground, this ground that I've hunted my whole life, even with cameras, just because I want to get out and walk and learn things. In my opinion, you know, you hear a lot of these guys say like, oh, that pinch is a great pinch year over year. It's just money. I don't see that on the ground that I hunt on any of the pieces, because things are just so ever changing, and deer, they shift a lot. And there's not, I couldn't tell you that there's a kill tree or a kill pinch that is money year in and year out. So I have to keep going out and figuring things out and where, you know, things have shifted to. So I definitely would change. I think, I don't think I would have as many deer killed or quality of deer killed as I do now. Definitely, just because, you know, trail cams tip you off to what is there. And, you know, it, I think it would take, you know, trail cams have, you know, really expedited the learning curve and the killing curve, I should say, because they do help you out. So,
yeah, absolutely. I just look at it like, for me, the way I use soaker cams even is if I'm, I try to put my trail cameras in locations where I can check them, if you, whether I'm hunting it or not. But if I go in and I check a non-cell camera and 2 days ago, 3 days ago, I got a picture of a buck, I'm going to that stand.
Oh,
Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to try to find, if it's not that stand, I'm going to find an adjustment to make with my saddle equipment. And I'm going to try to get in there and go do that, make it happen. And what I can learn from that then is I can see deer movement through that area. And then I just need to hop on and, I don't know, make it happen. Like, go look for the movement. I saw him on camera. Where's he coming from? Where's he going after he walks by this area? And that's going to allow me to put myself in a position to possibly kill him. So I look at it. See, it's the time thing. Right? It's the time thing. If you get a cell cam picture and from the time you got it to the time you're in the stands is 30 minutes. Is there a difference between that and then 3 days later? Right? You get that cell cam picture.
I don't think so. You know what I
mean? You don't think so?
Well, I mean, okay. Yes, there is. Now let me paint you a picture here. I actually had a guy reach out to me the other day, and we're going to do a podcast because he hit me with a story that he was not, he didn't want to talk about. I didn't know this existed in what he did. He basically, Cliff Notes version, he gets in a stand, okay? His target buck, I haven't recorded the podcast, so I'm trying to remember the notes. His target buck shows up and he sees the deer and he calls to the deer and the deer is going away from him, okay? Mm-hmm. He then gets a cell cam picture of the deer, and the deer is actually J-hooking around him, and he can't physically see it, but he gets a cell cam picture. When he got the picture, he rattles to the deer. Next thing you know, the deer's coming on a line and he shoots the deer. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he's like, immediately I felt terrible about what I did. Mm-hmm. And he's like, he wanted to air it out. He wants to talk about it. I'm excited to talk about it because is that right or wrong?
Like, it's legal.
It's legal, but in morally.
Well, wait a second.
Is that right or wrong?
Yeah. Now in Iowa, that's not legal.
Well, right. True. I forgot about that.
Yep. So was it last year before the rule change? I had a small buck and I was sitting in a tree. It was like 9 a.m. and I was kind of bored. I hadn't seen a ton of movement. I got a ping, like I was on my phone just scrolling like people were often do, and I got a notification. And about 250 yards away from me, I had a cell cam in this pinch point. This little, we're all like two creeks meet or two drainages meet, and a buck was crossing the creek where I had this cell cam, and he was a non-shooter. And I said, it's test time. Grabbed the horns, cracked them together. This buck came 20 yards broadside standing right in front of me.
Wow.
And I was just like,
how does that make you feel?
Not good, dude.
I know,
not good. And so it's just like a little bit because I'm a story guy. Like some of the best, let's see here. Let me think of one of my deer that I really did 2012 before cell cams. I did have one picture of this deer in velvet in late July. in a bean field, showed up. That was the only picture I got for him. I came into a bedding area one day to check it out. I bumped him out of his bed. He ran away. The next day, I was in there. And he went out the backside of the bedding area and in a way on another property. And I could see him in a field with a group of does chasing him. The next morning, I went back to that same stand, right smack dab in the middle of this bedding area. And here he comes back in to the bedding area. And I snort wheezed him in and I shot him, killed him. He's on my wall. Awesome story. Awesome chess match type of deal, right? Picture rattle comes in. Like, you know how when guys talk about baiting, they're like they either leave that part of the story out or they talk about it in a way where they're not necessarily proud of what they've done. It's legal. So if you're doing it, just say it. Like when I was in Kansas, dude, I hunted over bait piles. The day that I shot my buck, I didn't. It was in a great pinch, but the rest of that, I was hunting over acorns. I was hunting over corn piles that were spread out in front of me. Legal, right? I'm not afraid to mention that's what I did. But there is, I don't know. You either have to fully embrace it and say, yeah, fuck, dude, I rattled him in because I caught him on cam. You know what I mean? You have to embrace it. You have to be, hey, dude, I used it. I did it. I did what I did. You can't say I'm not proud of it, because if you're not proud of it, why'd you do it? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. That's an individual thing.
Yeah, it 100% is.
That's an individual thing.
Now, let me ask you this. That same deer that you saw from the tree, mm-hmm. and he went away from you and you kept after it and, you know, you ended up killing him. So let's say, hypothetical, you saw that deer exit the bedding and you're mm-hmm. seeing him play with the does and all that stuff. And then let's say he goes out of sight for a couple minutes, 30 mm-hmm. minutes, I don't, whatever. But then he hits a camera and it comes mm-hmm. to your phone. And then you see him, or you're like, you know, I already seen him. He was out in front of me for this long. And then like, you know, he's in that same area. Maybe he didn't go very far, but he's in that same area where you left him. Maybe he went mm-hmm. over the hill and you had a field edge camera and he hits that camera and then you rattle, 'cause you know, he's there and he comes and kills him. Is that the same thing?
Well, I mean, we could have these what if conversations,
I know,
you know, all day long. Again, it comes down to the individual, because would you have rattled if you didn't get a picture of him? Would you have rattled?
If I didn't, if I seen him and didn't get
a picture? If you saw him, maybe you tried to call him and he went away, but then you caught him on another trail cam. You caught him on a trail camera. Maybe he's doing that J-hook thing, caught him on camera, and then you rattle again and he comes in that second time. Like what this guy was talking about, you know,
like, I would have rattled.
What if? Like, yeah. Like what if? So like in Iowa, I can no longer use cell cams to aid in the harvest of wildlife.
Okay.
Okay. So that means that I can get the picture of him, but I see, this is where that gray area comes in. I can't make a decision based off of the intel that I got from the cell cam to put myself in a position to kill that animal. Right. So I can't rattle at him. That's illegal. How they police this or whatever it is. But from a more morality standpoint, I'm not rattling at that. I can't. Right. I just,
because by law, man, for you, that is immoral. Like it is not right. Yeah. You cannot do that. So, but let me ask you this, for Iowa, if it's a soaker cam, let's say just by happenstance, that deer hits a camera at noon and you go in there at 12:05 and you check the card and you're like, shit, he's right. He was just here. And then you get up in the tree that's right there and you had all your stuff with you and you rattle and he comes in, like that's illegal too, even though you pulled the card?
No, that's legal because it's not a cellular device.
But what if you checked it on your cell phone? you know, you put that little dongle in and then you're looking through it on your phone. That's
The camera itself is not a cellular device.
Okay. I got you.
Okay.
Got
so you. That's the definition. And I believe they said cannot use a cellular device to aid in the, so that would be your phone, like a cellular device sending pictures to your phone.
Gotcha. Have you eliminated cell cams?
Nope. And the reason why I haven't yet is for two reasons. One, I live 4 hours away from one of my farms, and I live an hour and 15 minutes away from the closest farm where I have cell cams. Now, an hour and 15 minutes, if I got on my horse and I hauled ass down there and I got in the tree, yes, you could debate that. That is it. But, and again, there's no time frame in this rule that says whether you can or you cannot, like what the time frame is. Is it 24 hours? Is it 48 hours? Is it 6 months? Right? There's no time. Yeah. So it's a gray area. But outside of that, the other thing about that is cell reception. Okay. So throughout the night, while I'm at my parents' house or I'm at home or a hotel or at a camp or somewhere, I can get pictures of deer. But the second I step onto this property, I am in a river bottom and I get zero cell reception in the bottoms. So that's where all the deer hang out. I can't get cell reception anyway. And for the most part, there were a couple trail cameras where I took it off instant and I had them send them to me at like 9 o'clock at night, just to be safe. So the deer were out of the area, or I was out of the area when the camera started sending me pictures for the day. I don't know, man. It's just a weird time. Imagine Fred Bear or one of these old timers, right? Listening to us have this conversation. He'd be like, so you're telling me a camera will send a picture to your phone and you can go hunt deer from it? I don't know. Maybe they would have embraced it. Maybe they're like, holy shit, that's easy. Let's go do it. You know, or maybe they'd be like, that's not sportsmanship or, you know, whatever. So.
But with the evolution of everything and all the gear, regardless if it was cell cams, like the modern day rifle and the scope, it's no iron sights. Like, I'll tell you what, the scope, I'll bet you when the scope was introduced over iron sights was like, holy shit. Now we have 50 magnification and stuff like that. You know, it's like, that's wild in itself. And muzzleloaders that shoot, you know, 1,000 yards out of the box, like where does it stop? So it's like, my whole thing with the cell cam thing is, I'm not going to put words in Fred Bear's mouth, but I'll bet you there would be some, you know, bringing it into your system somehow. Like, would Fred Bear just shoot, you know, recurve and longbow the whole long, or, you know, if he lived now too, like he could, he may have, but like, boy, a compound's pretty fun though too, you know, like. And if he throws a compound into his system, is it like, oh, now Fred Bear is not Fred Bear because he shot a longbow? Like, I don't know. How do we know that Fred Bear was the best hunter, like, out there? You know, other than, you know, there is a lot of video and pictures of him killing big shit. But I'll doubt there wasn't very many hunters out there that were competing either, you know, right. And there wasn't pressure. Like, how easy was it? How hard was it back then? Yeah. I don't know. And I'm not trying to, like, throw shade on Fred Bear. I'm just saying, like, it's all subjective. It's all like, you know, if Fred Bear was doing what he did back then now, I'd be like, or we'd probably be talking about him like we were talking about Andy May. Like, Andy May does things on a very high level around a lot of people that in a lot of pressure, you know? Like, every time Andy posts a picture of a deer, I'm like, Jesus, dude. Like, what do you have these penned up in your yard?
the only thing, dude, I'm not joking. I think the only thing that I can literally think of is he has sold his soul to the devil, right? Like, to be that good. And now, of course, I am joking, right?
Yeah, right.
But when you see somebody who has mastered the craft of getting in close to wild game like he has, it is one of the most impressive things that what I do and what my passion is, right? Like basketball players, they look at Steph Curry or even Caitlin Clark, and you're just like, these people are dropping bombs and they're going in, right? Like, that's impressive. When you have the cream of the crop and they're doing something that the normal man could or woman could never, ever, ever do, even if they practiced. Some people have gifts, right? Yep. And I don't have that gift.
Meaning,
right? I don't have that. All I have is the love of the game. You know what I mean? I have the love of the game. Some people are just the Michael Jordans, the Steph Currys of the bow hunting world, and that's that dude.
Yeah, he is so good, man. There's not a guy doing, you know, there's different buckets of types of hunting. Like, you've got the urban, you've got the private, you got the public, and then there's these little sub buckets off there too, as far as how people do things. And the way Andy does it, there's just nobody out there that does the bucket that Andy does on the same level. He's just that guy, you know, he's him. And he works his ass off, man. And I commend it. I love when he posts something on social media and it's like, I love listening to a story, you know, and it's like, God, he did it again. Like, there's no, you know, there are some people and you're like, that fucker killed that, you know, kind of thing. There's never like, there is some of that. You have that. Trust me. Like, there's people out there where you're like, God damn the fuck, you know, but Andy is the guy that, like, I want that guy to kill shit every year. Like, and a lot of people I do, but there are a select few guys where I'm like, I could care. Like, I hope that guy never kills anything. There is, man. There's
just, Just tell the truth.
There's bad humans out there, and I wouldn't wish ill on anybody, but there's some bad humans out there that shed a negative light in hunting, and I hope they never kill another animal, or I hope they get caught doing what they do wrong, because I know what they do wrong.
Yeah. Preach, brother. Mm-hmm. Preach, brother.
Yeah.
I almost feel like I should be drinking a glass of bourbon during this episode.
I got some Four Roses Private Select over there.
but I got to go do dad stuff here. I don't want to be that dad who's got bourbon breath at practice. Yeah. Is Dan drinking already? It's 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Holy shit.
Must have had a pretty good podcast today.
Exactly. Yeah, man, this whole, like, I know we talk about this, especially on my podcast I do with everybody. It's just like, I am trying to let go of as much as I possibly can for the future and just do me, right? If that makes sense, like, just do me. And I think that's where a lot of people should be, is just do you, right? Fuck what some dude on the internet says. It's like, well, probably high fence. Okay. Like, I don't have a lot of time to even just make those types of comments, right? Now, is there a difference in, so like, there is a difference here of a 170 on private manicured land and a 170 on private. I'd like to hear the private or the public land story, probably over the private land type stuff. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, Dan, you're bringing up a great point, because I literally, the podcast I dropped today, I had to come into Jesus with myself over the holidays. I went on this Illinois public land hunt, and it's something I'm trying to do, because it's a challenge for me. Public land is a challenge for me. The first year I went to Kansas, I had three opportunities, full draw three times, never let an arrow go for one reason or another. This Illinois trip, spent 8 days. I took the bow off the hanger one time, and that was it. I had a fun time, but
humbling experience.
Very humbling, you know. And I had a coming to Jesus with myself, and it was like, I felt like I was doing the public land thing because everybody else was talking about it and wanting to do it. Like, it wasn't for myself. It was, I expected one thing, and I was doing it because this is the cool hip thing to do. So I'm not going to lie to you. When I left there on my way home, I was thinking, man, I was like, man, it was fun, but it wasn't that fun for me.
Yeah.
And I was thinking I actually said to myself, I would rather spend the same amount of money to get a lease and have that be so I can control the pressure. I can control that. But I'm going to tell you here, Dan, it doesn't put asses in the seats. It doesn't put asses. Leases don't put asses in the seats. And they don't leases and private land don't get downloads. And I was chasing downloads. Not going to lie to you. When you have something and you want to see it succeed, you don't want to see the line just going straight across or diving. You want to, for me anyway, I want to know that people are still enjoying it. And that's a way to be able to see that people are enjoying it and still wanting to hear the content is because it's going up. Now, I told myself, I'm like, I'd rather get a lease because the way I'm wired is I'm a product of my environment. I grew up hunting private ground. I bust my ass during the off season. I was Todd Prignitz in the spring, in the summer, and leading up. That's when you do your stand grooming, your food plot manipulation, your TSI, your whatever. That is me. And then when it comes October 1, you have the playbook in front of you. You just call the right plays, and then you go execute. For me to get out of a tree in Illinois in the morning, not knowing where I'm going to go hunt that night and never being to this area, was a hard thing for me because I did not want to go and walk around and scout every day all day. I wanted to go back. I wanted to have some breakfast. I wanted to converse with my buddies that were there. Hey, what's the game plan? What are we going to do tonight? No, instead, I had to. It was fun, but like I couldn't wrap my head around walking an area and scouting a whole bunch and then hunting that area that night. Like my mindset is I've done the scouting in the past. Like I've done the scouting this spring and summer. I know this is where it's at. I know this is going to happen. I'm going to execute. Now I'm going to stay the hell out because I know. So that's, I don't know how to pump public ground yet. You know what I mean? But for me, the fun is doing all the off season work and then kind of relaxing in the fall and executing my plan. That's that's where my heart lies, you know?
Right. And when you have, and I think a lot of it comes down to the energy. Where do you put your energy? Do you put your energy in pounding public, scouting, dodging, other hunters? Or do you put your energy in the preseason work, right? The preseason, postseason, timber stand improvement, food plots, all that stuff. But for me, I have this internal debate. Well, I have the internal debate, but I've never had to. Like, it's similar to the do you rattle when you have a cell cam picture type deal, right? Because I've never had a property where I've been able to do any type of habitat improvement work. Never been on it. All my pieces are permission. This year, however, this March, I'll probably go in and do some bedding area type stuff where I'm able to hinge cut some lesser quality trees down on one of the pieces of property. And that's going to be, I guess, my attempt at some habitat work. But let me ask you a question. Where does the term hunting then come into play, right? If you make the bedding area, you plant the food plots, you put up the box blind or the blind, or you set your tree stand in a location where they're coming to you, you got the cell cam over top of it, or maybe there's no cell cam at all. I'm looking for the definition of hunting, right? And when I look at the ing at the end of hunt, right, it's the activity of, which means there has to be some type of motion in it. You know what I mean? Like maybe I'm saying this wrong, but I look at hunting and I say, there's gotta be a chess match somewhere, right? But the thing about habitat improvement is you can manicure property so much that you know exactly where and when deer are going to step out. And just like a trail camera, It can give you a ton of information, and it's just like, we know they're going to show up tonight. We just have to, maybe I got to wait for the wind to shift a little bit, or maybe I got to wait for this. We know they're going to be there. And so this comes down to me just doing me.
Yep. Yeah.
Doing me. Like, I got to do me. And I can't, like, some people think that all of that is important. That's awesome, dude. Congratulations. Awesome. I like, if you want to go to an outfitter, dude, congratulations, man. Awesome. I will congratulate you on the deer that you shoot. But the story you tell me, I don't know. There's levels to the stories, man. Stories get grades.
For right? Sure.
Like I'll be completely honest. When I shot my first whitetail out of state in South Dakota, I will never, ever, ever forget that story. And when I tell people, it blows their mind because of what I had to do to recover this deer, that deer. And it's one hell of a story, right? As opposed to, all right, I was sitting in this box blind over top of a food plot. The deer came out of a bedding area that I hinge cut. Like, to some people that might be an awesome story, but to me it's just like, cool. Okay, cool. I passed this deer as a 190 and now he's a 200. It's like, okay, I can't relate to any of that. Actually, I can't relate to habitat improvement. I can't relate to hunting on pieces of property without pressure, or that are literally like tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars are spent on that. Do you know what my wife would do? She would attempt murder on me if I spent $10,000 on anything hunting related. Mm-hmm. Right. And I don't mean just like going and buying a chunk of property. I'm talking about, I have the property. 10 G's is going to diesel fuel for food plots or food plot equipment and all that type of shit. Like, yeah. I am not in a position to relate to that. And I think that's where my personal preferences and opinions lie, is because I can't relate to that. And so I like stories and talking to people who I can relate to, because I can go, dude, I know exactly what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. The doing me is my 2025. Like, that is
motto.
My motto. Yep. It is like, because there's things that you hold back a little bit on when you're talking, because it's like, you don't know how it's going to get perceived. You know, I'm a legal beagle guy. I do everything legal. But yeah, there's some things that are, you know, distasteful to a lot of guys. Like, I might sit here and be like, Dan, I shot a 190 in Michigan this year in a box blind over a food plot that I made that he was hitting a mug. And you'd be like, when we get off record, you'd be like, that guy fucking cheated, you know, or something like that.
Somebody could say that. Yeah.
Yeah. You could say that. And, so that's my thing. Like, this year I have a new farm that, in order for me to, for the farm to hunt bigger and be able to hunt it on a south wind, I have to put a food plot in and hunt from a box blind. Like, that's, now I'm not going to go in and put an acre food plot in. It's going to be like an eighth acre little kill plot, but I'm going to put Egyptian weed around it. There's going to be a scrape tree in it. And where I get my rocks off are me actually doing it, seeing it grow, and actually having a deer use it the way I envisioned it. It's like, holy shit, I just did that. Like, that is what's so cool to me about it. And it might not be cool to you. Like, I won't lie to you. If I watch a YouTube video and a guy shoots a deer on a box blind in Missouri out of a box blind on a food plot, doesn't excite me. Like I just said 10 minutes ago, it doesn't put asses in the seats. Mm-hmm. Because you're not out there grinding it with 500 other guys that are, like, you know, just traipsing around on public ground. It's all about the experience you want to have too. I don't want to go beat my freaking head against the wall with 500 other guys. That's just where I'm at. That's where my, mm-hmm. and why am I trying to, Why am I trying to deviate? Why am I trying to go against the grain of myself if it's not fun for me? Like, yeah. That's not fun for me. So yeah. Why don't do something that's fun for me, even if it does not put asses in the seats?
Yeah, I agree. It's just it's a different type of chess match. But
it is.
I will say this as a hunter, not about being a podcast host or being in the industry or whatever. As a hunter, I knew when I went to Michigan, it was not going to be easy. I was not going to see the quality of deer that I saw in Iowa on the public lands. And I knew it was going to be. But in order for me to understand, I have to experience it. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I can't just go, oh, yeah, I know what you mean, to yep. a guy who does that. So, you know, when I went to Michigan, holy shit, dude, it was tough. I ran into other people. The deer were almost non-existent until right at last light. And it was small bucks and very, you know, a lot of does. And so I needed that to not only go, holy shit, when a guy says Iowa is easy to hunt compared to Michigan public land, hell yes, it is. You know, absolutely it is. And maybe that's the rules and regulations that are set up for this state, or maybe it's because Iowa has 500,000 less resident hunters than Michigan does. And so it's one of those scenarios that you are a product of your environment, like you said. I just was born in Iowa, right? And I live here, I work here, family's from here. And so if I was born into the same family into Michigan, I'd probably be beating my head against a rock on public too. But I am where I am, and I just do what I do, and I try to share the stories as crystal clear as humanly possible from everybody. And that's why I love talking to people, whether they're successful or not, all over the country, because again, you hear a story about someone from Florida and they're like, dude, I have never seen a buck bigger than 120 inches. Mm-hmm. Right. And when someone says it, like I had a guy on from the UP and he goes, dude, if you shoot 130-inch deer in the UP, it's going in a newspaper. People are going to start talking about it like that. Meanwhile, in Iowa, I'll lift my head up and watch a 130 walk by, but I'm not going to do like, I'm just like, you know what I mean? So it's like, there's not 100%. It's just, you are where you're at, right? And some people have the ability to have great quality hunts, unpressured hunts. And some people, it's the environment. It's the environment that causes you to be who you are. And so.
And that's the beauty of it, Dan, because.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Like I said, this year, I had the biggest deer I've ever had a chance to hunt at in Michigan. You want to know what he scored? He probably was like right at 140 to low 140s. Okay.
Yeah.
And you might be like, oh, like you're not picking the bow up for that. He was a 143 year old, in my opinion. And Dan, I went full draw on that deer three times in one morning, all within 25 yards, and could not get him killed. And I'll tell you what. I went to Iowa in 2019 and killed my biggest deer ever with a bow, had the best hunt of my life, like the best week of hunting ever. I mean, ever. I could not, I'll never probably have a week like that ever again, regardless the state I'm in. Mm-hmm. That 140, that one morning, topped that 186. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even kill the deer. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is because I knew that the deer existed. I had a few pictures of him, but I knew he didn't live on me. I was on a very small piece of property, and I knew it was going to take a doe for him to come over and investigate. Mm-hmm. I get in the tree that morning. It was early. You know, it was still dark. And all of a sudden, I hear coming out of the thicket right at me. And all I hear is the cadence. And I'm like, holy shit, they're coming right at me. And I can't see anything. It's dark. Before I know it, there's a deer at the base of my tree. And all I can do is look through the binos, and it's the doe. and I can hear him coming, and he's just long drawn. And I didn't know it was him. I just knew it was a buck. Gets to 20 yards, and I get the binos out, and I can see it's him at 20 yards. And he sat there with that doe for over 40 minutes within 20 yards of me, and it was dark, and I could not do a thing. Finally got to the point where he kind of worked around and came to a scrape, a mock scrape that I built in April, and he's all up in it and 25 yards, and I got the bow like this, and I'm just waiting for it to get daylight and shooting light, looking at my watch and everything. Finally gets to the time I go to full draw, and I can't get him in there. Like, I can't get him killed. And he walks off and goes to her, and then he ends up getting killed 3 days into gun season, and I'm like, that sucks, but man, I'll tell you what, I'd go back to that day tomorrow and relive it again. Like, that's just how cool it was. And, you know, I killed a 7-point this year on the ground, spot and stalk, 35 yards. He mounted a doe twice before I killed him. I seen him bedded in a field, knew that's who I wanted to go kill. He was almost 21 inches inside wide. He was a 7-point that scored 113. Okay. He was, and I've been watching this deer all summer. I had pictures of him, videos of him through the spotter. When I killed that deer and got to recover him with my daughter and my wife, it was the best. It was the best. It was the tip of the iceberg this year. It was awesome. And, you know, for me to do a spot and stalk on that, does it make it better than me putting in a food plot or a mock scrape and killing a deer over there? I don't know. It's just all how you shake it and what you want out of it, really, I guess, is in
you know, now that we've been talking about this, whether it's pounding public land or planting food plots and doing the manicures, really what it is the individual's excitement level, the 30 seconds or however many seconds before the trigger is pulled.
Yep.
Right. And only then do you realize how important this stuff is to you, right? Because for me, when I drew back on that mule deer this year, after 6 years of trying for mule deer, I was like, oh. Or in Kansas, 5 seconds, he shows up. I had 5 seconds to grab my bow, draw it back, anchor. And I was like, oh, shit. whether you plant the food plot, whatever, I think that's the moment that is the most important, right?
100% because is.
That's where we find common ground, is that the moment before and the moment after the arrow or the trigger's pulled, where all hunters can connect, right? And I think that's the moment where everybody needs to focus on. And not all the way leading up. The stories are cool, right? Great. It's the story. But the common ground is that short moment where we pull the trigger, we let the arrow go. We like that moment where there's unpredictability and we're like, holy shit. And then maybe even leading up to the moment, and which is hands down, I'm not joking, Aaron, my favorite part of hunting, period, is touching the antlers and lifting up the head for the first time. Like, whether it's big or small, or even it's a doe and you grab the ear and you're looking at her, that is the moment that I get the most jacked up about, are those moments right there. And then everything after that and everything before that, like that whole period, that's where we find the common ground. And that's where, as hunters, we have to find whether or not we appreciate what we've done. Because don't get me wrong, there's a lot of people out there who just kill deer to kill deer. And they're not like, I don't know. They don't get excited about it, maybe. And maybe you don't get excited, but I don't know. But maybe you're doing it for a different reason than just the love of the game. And so I don't know. Again, it just comes back to appreciating that we even have this opportunity to go and do it. And like, you can't do this in Europe, right?
No.
You can't do this shit anywhere else in the world.
And honestly, Dan, you nailed it. The common ground, that 15 to 30 seconds of chaos. Like I just redid my intro to my podcast, and I say in that intro, we all strive for the 15 seconds of chaos. Or, you know, we're building our whole year around that 15 seconds of chaos that you really don't understand. You can't explain it unless you've been there. I literally say that in the intro. And that is the common ground. And in however, this is what I'm going to say. However you want to get there, Dan, if it's, as long as it's legal, however you want to frickin' get there, if it's different than what I would do, that's all that matters. If you want to put a food plot in or just hunt barren ground, or not barren ground, but untampered ground on public ground, it's all your story and how you want it to play out in your movie. Like, it's all it is. So however you and I get to that chaos, that common ground that all of us try to get to, that's what we're ultimately fighting for. It's not so much pulling the trigger. It's getting to that. You cannot uncontrollably stop your heart. Because it is, you're jumping out of your skin. That is the best part about hunting.
Yeah.
I should and say maybe, the best part. There's a lot of good stuff, but.
Yeah. I wonder if people who do crystal meth feel that way. Like, you know, like guys, like how we feel when we're drawing the bow back and we let the arrow go and we're shaking. Ah, shit. If people who smoke crystal meth get to live that every single day.
That took a turn for that. I didn't think there of you go.
Yeah. Well, I could only hold back my dumbass comments for so long. Okay. So
God, you should have an anonymous listener reach out that does crystal meth and be like, dude, it does feel that way.
He's like, hey, dude, I'm a deer hunter and I love crystal meth. It is the shit. Like, I love feeling like I just shot a 200-inch buck for 14 days in a row.
Oh my God.
Ah, crystal meth. I tell you what, though, this is not the first time I've mentioned crystal meth on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. So it's pretty common at this point.
I love it.
That's well,
good deal.
Holy shit.
I don't even know what we talked about. Couldn't even tell you what we talked about.
Dude, it was two dudes. Here's what, let me just recap today. Two dudes who love deer hunting is what this was, right?
Yeah.
And they love doing what they're doing. They still have the passion for it. And hopefully this conversation connects with whether it pisses you off or whether it makes you happy of what we said. I don't know. We're all hunters, dude. And I think my favorite part about podcasting is just hearing the stories from everybody doing it differently throughout the entire country.
I agree.
Right. And you know how me and you, here we are, we're just like, ah, Jesus, you know, season's over, blah, blah, blah. Meanwhile, down south, there's dudes running around with full erections right now because the rut is popping in the south.
One of these years, I'm going to go south and hunt somewhere.
Yeah.
I've never done it. I think it'd be kind of neat to do it. And,
yep.
You know, I want to do it.
Yep,
absolutely. Get out of the cold. I can still hunt till... As we're recording this till Sunday, I can only hunt does. I got to go kill one more doe. So,
yeah, my last day here in Iowa is Friday, I believe. And then the next time I go and do something is going to be deer related is shed hunting slash a little bit of habitat work. So
nice. Good deal.
Aaron, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and do this. If you guys are interested in listening to Aaron's podcast, The Fall, it's everywhere that podcasts are. It's a great podcast. Go check them out. Aaron, man, appreciate your time.
Yeah, thank you, Dan.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.